That's the simplest thing I could say, because you have an opportunity to make change happen. You know, I'm not going to be in this position forever. There's going to be somebody behind me, younger leaders that are coming up. You know, this keynote address was given to only 17 people throughout this country. 17 people in the Navajo Nation was represented.
The convention continues Wednesday with caucus meetings. Biden will deliver his acceptance speech on Thursday. The Cherokee Nation welcomed two bison this week from Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming to its herd in northeast Oklahoma. The bison are from a partnership with the Intertribal Buffalo Council. The Cherokee Nation is one of 16 tribes across the country to receive bison from Yellowstone. The tribe's been growing its bison herd the last 5 years, managing a ranch with about 180 bison. The tribe's working on preservation efforts and seeking economic opportunities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
On Tuesday, California Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency in response to wildfires blazing across the state. 10,000 strikes of lightning have caused an alarming number of independent fires to spring up across the state. The governor had already declared a state of emergency due to the extreme heat. The new order is intended to provide additional help for those affected by the fires. The largest fire, called the Lightning Complex, has burned over 85,000 acres in five Northern California counties and is only 5% contained. Another group of lightning-adjacent fires in Napa and Sonoma counties has consumed over 46,000 acres with zero containment. Fires are also being fought near Vacaville, north of Sacramento, along the coast north of Santa Cruz, and in a mountainous area northeast of Los Angeles. Evacuations have been ordered in many of the affected areas. The state had been under threat of rolling blackouts since Friday due to high temperatures, and the governor said on Monday, quote, "I'm the governor, I'm ultimately accountable, and we failed to prepare." Major flooding in China's Sichuan province has required over 100,000 residents to evacuate the area. Torrential rains on Tuesday forced authorities to call a red alert in the region, with water in some areas expected to exceed flood protection levels by more than 16 feet. Water levels at the nearby Three Gorges Project, a major hydroelectric facility and flood control project along the Upper Yangtze River, were expected to rise to their highest level since the dam was built in 2003. Staff, police, and volunteers tried to protect a UNESCO World Heritage site of a large statue. As sandbagging protection efforts failed, the damage to the 232-foot-tall statue of Buddha, built over a span of 90 years in the 8th century, remains unclear. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on workers' rights with Jenka Soderberg, followed by news from the BOO. At 6, it's Rural Roots Rising. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, tune in for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 64. Tomorrow's weather, expect partly cloudy skies with a high of 85. Today in history, in 2014, Iranian poet and activist Simin Behbahani died. She was twice nominated for a Nobel Prize in Literature and battled censorship by the Iranian government. She was known for a style of poetry that is an expression of both the pain of loss and the beauty of love despite that pain. The quote of the day is from Simin Behbahani, who said, quote, "Old I may be, but given the chance, I will learn." While Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has promised to suspend changes to Postal Service operations until after the election, House Democrats are saying that's not enough. This morning, congressional Democrats presented a bill requiring the complete restoration of mail service to, quote, pre-DeJoy levels, while also providing the agency with $25 billion in emergency funding. The updated Delivering for America Act also requires that all ballots and other election-related mail be treated as first class to ensure timely delivery. Union leaders, civil rights groups, and lawmakers had immediately denounced DeJoy's actions as inadequate, noting that he did not commit to undoing changes that have caused major mail backlogs across the nation. Those actions include the removal of mail sorting machines. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reconvened Congress for a special session on Saturday to vote on the postal bill. The Senate has given no indication it will interrupt its months-long vacation. A California law mandates that everyone in the state has a right to clean, accessible water, but many disadvantaged communities are still unable to gain access. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Under California law, everyone in the state has a right to clean and affordable drinking water. But many disadvantaged communities still rely on contaminated water, either from private wells or public water sources.
Our groundwater in the Central Valley in California has been highly polluted, and it's running through old and dilapidated infrastructure, getting to people's taps.
Susana De Anda is co-founder of the Community Water Center, an environmental justice organization. She says industry and agriculture contribute to the problem. Runoff from fertilizer can cause high nitrate levels, which pose health risks. And excessive pumping during droughts can cause arsenic to accumulate in groundwater. But relief is in sight. Last year, California passed a law establishing a fund for safe and affordable drinking water. Using money from the state's cap-and-trade program, it allocates up to $130 million to solutions each year for a decade.
This money is also going to be available not only to just public water systems that are not meeting safe drinking water standards, but it's also available for people on domestic wells, on private wells.
So De Anda says it's an important step toward California's goal of clean water for all. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Several environmental groups are suing the Trump administration because of a new rule that would dramatically reduce environmental review of federal projects. Nadia Ramlagan has more on the story.
Environmental groups have filed a lawsuit arguing the Trump administration has sped through an industry-friendly rewrite of the National Environmental Policy Act, known as NEPA. As one of the nation's first major environmental laws, NEPA requires that any construction project proposed on federal lands, such as highways, buildings, and airports, be assessed for potential impact on the environment and consider local residents' input. Attorney Kim Hunter with the Southern Environmental Law Center says there are certain procedures every administration is required to follow when attempting a policy change.
And what the Trump administration does here is cut every single corner in its rush to go ahead and pull down these environmental regulations that have been in place for the past four decades.
The White House Council on Environmental Quality says the rule change to relax the NEPA requirements, which went into effect last month, was made to speed up lengthy environmental assessments. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has said he would undo the NEPA rollback. Ron Ross of Charlotte heads the Northwood Estates Community Organization. He says the rollback will particularly affect communities of color. He notes that for decades, urban renewal projects placed Charlotte's Black residents in the path of pollution from major construction projects.
Now exists I-77, interchanges, Milcon Highway 16, all of those are in the area, as well as the continuation of industrial facilities being located in our community.
Ross points out that communities of color often lack the resources and time to battle proposals that compromise local air and water quality, and believes the NEPA changes will create additional obstacles.
In our communities, again, we have a dilemma. Do we worry about trying to provide food for our kids and make sure they're doing okay? Or do we worry about the environment? And again, all those things are tied together.
In the lawsuit, groups that include Clean Air Carolina and the North Carolina Wildlife Federation say they rely on NEPA processes to flag projects that might impact air quality and climate change, from toll bridges and highway projects to concentrated animal feeding operations. For Public News Service, I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Michigan has declared racism a public health crisis, and lawmakers in the state are calling to make that announcement more official. Mary
Two
Sherman
weeks after
has
Governor
more
Gretchen
on the story.
Whitmer declared racism a public health crisis, There are calls for Michigan lawmakers to make it even more official. A concurrent resolution introduced in early June would make the same declaration and commit the legislature to work with the governor to promote racial equity and justice. Senator Erica Geis, who co-sponsored the Senate version, notes the measures have since languished in committee.
The fact that it was sent to committees that will likely not take them up is, I think, the point about the question, Lansing, are you listening?
Geis adds COVID-19 has claimed the lives of a disproportionate number of people of color. She says the resolution would address the longtime disparities in healthcare access in marginalized communities. In the Department of Health, Behavior, and Education at the University of Michigan, Dr. William Lopez contends the pandemic has uncovered systems of segregation, incarceration, deportation, and low wages that have shaped the lives and health of communities of color.
And I think this becomes a multi-pronged approach for us. How do we add humanity to our community so people understand that Black and brown families should be together and should be healthy? And given that our country discounts our lives, how do we simultaneously change the structure and take care of ourselves?
Romulus City Councilwoman Tina Talley says a collective effort is needed to reduce systemic racism.
We all have a part to play in this. We had the protesters out there diligently protesting on this matter with George Floyd. And now us as legislators or whatever piece we have in this puzzle, we have to be willing to step up and do that. It's action time.
Along with Romulus and several other communities, the Wayne County Commission approved a resolution declaring racism a public health crisis. Chairwoman Alicia Bell believes that's why the governor stepped up as well.
That's wonderful for us to say these words, but we need action and tangible outcomes. What are going to be the outcomes for our people? What are we going to see in the environment? What are we going to see in our health disparities? What are we going to see in water? What are we going to see in housing?
Governor Whitmer also recently signed an order creating the Black Leadership Advisory Council to review state laws that might perpetuate racial inequities and recommend measures to prevent discrimination. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
The Postal Service has warned that ballots may not arrive in time to be counted for the election, but one Postal Service worker is asking the public not to lose faith. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
The U.S. Postal Service has warned Montana and other states that ballots may not arrive in time to be counted in the November election, raising alarms that voters could be disenfranchised. But one post office worker says folks should put more faith in the Postal Service. Robin Eddy is state steward for the Montana Postal Workers Union and works as a mail clerk in Livingston. She says there are already protocols in place based on past elections for securing mail-in voting.
We work closely with the election officials in our county. They come in 2-3 times a day, check their box. We go through the drop box and pull out any ballots when we get within the last couple of days and make sure that they're either hand-delivered to the election officials or we call them, tell them there's stuff down there.
Governor Steve Bullock has granted Montana counties the option to conduct the November election completely by mail. President Donald Trump has said that mail-in balloting could produce a rigged election, making the issue into a partisan flashpoint. But Eddie says USPS workers try to stay out of the political fray and focus on doing their jobs.
We're Switzerland. It comes in, we sort it, we deliver it.
She also notes there are many safeguards in place to ensure the security of the mail. One of the biggest concerns is the sheer volume of ballots expected this November. In a letter to congressional Democrats, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy says this was the concern he wanted to raise in letters warning states about delivery times. But Eddie notes the USPS handles large mail volumes on occasions other than elections.
We process over 1.3 billion mail cards, Christmas cards at Christmas time, and the ballots are nowhere near that many.
On Saturday, critics of the Trump administration are holding a Save the Post Office Day, encouraging supporters to show up at their local post offices at 11 a.m. local time. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, Nadia Romlagan, Mary Sherman, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Juneteenth Radio, reporting on the latest stories going on nationally in African American and Black society. At 9, Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire, connecting history with current events. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. Then at 11, it's Radio Zine, offering a variety of intriguing public affairs programming. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our listeners. If you'd like to support our programming, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.